Well, good afternoon. My name is Julianne Smith. I'm the director of the Europe program here at CSIS. And I want to thank all of you for braving the snow and the chilly temperatures and the wind today for coming out and joining us for this Statesman's Forum with the French Minister of Defense, Minister Hervé Morin. We're so pleased to welcome him here this afternoon. As most of you know, the minister has had a very distinguished career, both at the local level, at the national level inside France. I just wanted to highlight a couple of his many achievements and parts of his career. After studying law and political science, he was appointed the service administrator in the French National Assembly. He was also a lecturer at Paris 5, the René Descartes University. In 1993, he joined the French Ministry of Defense, and from 95 to 97, he worked for François Léotard, the State Minister and Minister of Defense. Of course, simultaneously, the minister has had a very rich political career, having served both on town councils. He served as the mayor of a city, and he was also a member of parliament. And today, he's the chair of a new centrist party in France. Some of you may know it, the Nouveau Centre, appropriate title, of course. The minister today will speak on the U.S., NATO, and the EU, Partnership for Security in a Troubled World. We're looking forward to his presentation. Obviously, there's a long list of issues to address, not just the issues that are in the headlines today, not just Afghanistan, but a very rich and wide agenda. And so we're so pleased that he's here. With the NATO summit, of course, just 4 weeks away, and the expected move for France to become fully integrated into the NATO alliance, we feel that this meeting couldn't be more timely, and we're so pleased that he took some time out of his very busy schedule to join us here today. The minister will be presenting his remarks in French, and I hope you all have a translation should you need it. And then after he makes his opening remarks, we will, of course, take your questions. Without further ado, thank you, Mr. Minister, for joining us. Please join me in welcoming him to CSIS.
Well, I can see that the relations between the U.S. and France are very good because it's snowing in Washington as well as the snowing in Paris. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very happy to be here in Washington. I was here a year ago, where I had the pleasure to spend a great dinner with Bob Gates. And at the end of the dinner, I told him, I hope that next time when I come back, I have the opportunity to see you again. And he had this sense of humor. He said, well, before that, I have to convince my wife. And I'm noticing that there is at least one family in the world where it's not the wife who decides and where the husband is able to impose a few decisions. And so I'm very happy to come into Washington to see him again and broach a few topics who are among the topics I will broach during this a bit long intervention. You will forgive me for that. First, thank you to enable me to make a speech on this topic for the Minister of Defense of France and convince European that I am. I think that Europe is the political construction. Europe is a federation sui generis, which is building up, but I think that European building up is not contradictory, this political build up is not contradictory to the fact that we are friends of Americans and we are allies with the Americans. There is no contradiction between European building up of a European defense and the fact to preserve the transatlantic link. I would like to remind you a coincidence. The last French presidency of the European Union was held during the second quarter of 2000, and like the one that has just come to an end, it saw the election of a new president of the United States. Don't be afraid, of course, the resemblance remains here. Is it, ladies and gentlemen, possible to remember the world before 9/11, before Iraq, before Afghanistan, before Georgia, before the discovery of Iran's secret military nuclear program before the financial crisis? Well, ladies and gentlemen, for many reasons, the period in which we are entering is a turning point of a new world. Why this period more than another one? Because this administration, with a huge hope that came along with the election of Barack Obama, seized the opportunity to rebuild the world order in cooperation with the rest of the world and especially with Europe in a spirit of shared responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that Europeans keep saying this when you see them. Let us not have a single-sided view of the world. The globalization, the growth of Asia and also of South-South relations, the arrival of new powers, the high expectations to the enlargement of the Council of Security Council do not give us much time to react and to think differently. Our time is that of relative powers, and this brings us to be aware of our common interests in terms of security. I know that the Americans have some trouble to think this, to adapt their mental map, but I think that today's world and tomorrow's world is the world where the balance of powers is changing, where we are seeing a transfer of powers, which is unavoidable and that must happen. And the financial crisis we are living through is a new revealer of interdependencies and fragilities of each of us. No country, and I insist, no country in the world is sheltered from the economic and social and hence political consequences of this long-lasting crisis. And nobody can think that the world that we can see not far from us would be the same as the one of yesterday and today. And for 50 years, and while we're celebrating this year the 20th anniversary of the fall of Berlin Wall, the Europeans, strong of a tragic history, know now the necessity of cooperation between the states. And this is the model that Europe can propose today. Partnership rather than sterile rivalry, assume interdependency rather than isolated adventures, the respect of the other one rather than blind single-sidedness, cooperation rather than competition between the states. And this cooperation between the states is unavoidable. It will happen anyway for one reason, because we are in a finished world. We are this world is finished in terms of resources, in terms of energetic resources, of capabilities. There are no new borders, if I can say. We know the global side of the world. We have to transfer from a world of competition to a world system of cooperation between the states. And this system of cooperation between the states, ladies and gentlemen, those who have achieved it much better than the others are the Europeans. Europeans were able to go beyond the national interest to find the general interest of the European Union. And this sketch is valid at the scale of the whole world. We have gone from a power system of powers to a system where we have built a school of peace and stability based on respect of law and standards. And in this troubled environment, Europe and America have an essential role to play. But they will not be able to play it only provided they are united and strong and provided they respect the values that are the base of our system. We need a renovated transatlantic partnership between an America open to the others and America open to the others, I repeat, and Europe, which is finally reinforcing. And let me at first, even if it's a bit rude, because I'm on your land here, on your territory, to talk about reinforcing Europe, the European construction and Atlantic alliance during this last half century, being both pillars of strong ambition for Europeans. Set up a framework of collective security that can ensure prosperity and stability of the continent. The OSCE, when it created a Euro-Atlantic space from Vancouver to Vladivostok, is the third pillar of this process that made it possible for 20 years to make a great political and economic transition in peace. European Union, as well as NATO, are as poles of stability, unique poles of stability and security in the world. The urging request of those who want to become members are the best proofs. But beside these remarkable achievements, there have been failures. Let us hide the face. At the top of those, of course, the Balkan conflicts at the heart of the European continent, which revealed the insufficiencies of Europeans, and it revealed quite very late going to sleep of most of European nations in front of their obligation to take in charge their own defense without thinking they could base their defense on the Americans. And in 1962, John Fitzgerald Kennedy had proposed an alliance based on two pillars. Let us say it straightforwardly. The conditions for such a situation have never been met, and this is the responsibility of the Europeans. Other more recent failures, the frozen conflicts from the former Soviet Union, the Jordan crisis reminded us that it could degenerate into an open war. And here, for the first time in history, the European Union managed to stop the spiral of violence. What happened with Georgia, what is happening now with piracy in the Gulf of Aden and the setting up of the first naval operation of the European Union, and let me remind you, it's the first naval operation of European command from the British soil by a British admiral. It's quite important in terms of symbol. It is a significant military presence, and it is a strong symbol of the European construction, and it is also the testimony of a silent revolution, that of the building up of Europe of Defense. 20 years ago, Europe of Defense was taboo. You couldn't find one political official who had the guts to talk about this concept. They talk about common security of the Western European Union, who everybody forgot about the existence, which was the armed arm of the common security and defense policy. And this was 20 years ago. You would have never found a statement by Helmut Kohl or François Mitterrand using these very words of European defense. And 10 years ago, there was not a taboo anymore, but it was an intellectual concept that at best made people smile in such a room as we are here now today. And since I haven't seen you smile, I think that we have made progress. Worse, some and many here in the United States, on the American continent, only saw an element of nuisance, an annoying element, and now, today, Europe of Defense is on its track. In 1998, while the French-British statement of Saint-Malo was published, who would have thought, and I remind you that this French-British statement, the U.S. administration of that time, had seen this with a very... Mrs. Albright was not very happy about that. If you prove this, that maybe probably was true. So, 10 years after Saint-Malo, who would have thought that Europe would have launched 20 civil operations, 6 military operations on various theaters such as Bosnia, the Gulf of Aden, the heart of Africa, Indonesia, and Caucasus? Who would have thought he could have seen a UFOR Chad operation at in the very depth of the Chad desert, gathering Irish, Swedish, Polish, Danish, Romanian soldiers to guarantee the safety of the Darfur refugees. And some of them, these Europeans, are not even members of the Atlantic Alliance. Nobody could have thought this 10 years after the statement of Saint-Malo. Of course, I do not know the problems of fourth generation that are as much present or, and even more within the European Union than in NATO, and the capability shortages that are quite severe. But the reality, you cannot escape reality. Europe of defense is an avoidable future to ensure our security. And this Europe of defense for us is a priority, a military and political priority, because Europeans must have the means to act by themselves. What we want is that the Europeans have an autonomous military capability to lead, to conduct robust military operations, of course, that do not have the size and dimension of what the alliance can do, but that can have an autonomous military capability. What can be an economic power? Representing 25% of the world's trade exchanges, that would not have the military means to implement its political choices. When he talked to the Conference of Security in Munich, President Sarkozy reminded the choice offered to the old continent. Let me say this. His words were really very fair and true. Does Europe want peace, or does it just want to be left in peace? This is the very topic. And the sadly reminding name of the Bavarian capital can only strengthen the value of the test offered to Europe and for the future. The interest, which has been very well understood by the Americans, is to have strong European allies. Having weak allies is useless. And this is a source of annoyance. And I often told Robert Gates in our meetings that there was a major contradiction in the American concept. And it has erased over the time by the statement of George Bush last year at the summit of Bucharest. And it is leaving progressively from the American mind. But there was a contradiction having the Europeans to be adults, to be responsible for their own security, and to participate in the security burden, what the Americans keep requesting from the Americans, to ask them to do more for their defense, while at the same time not considering them as adults and responsible. How do you want, if you are not responsible, dedicate more assets? Or, I had given him this image. It is like a child who wants to walk. You have to give him the opportunity to stand up. And this was the contradiction for a long time of the American administration. They wanted the Europeans to do more for their security without having this autonomous capability that we are wishing to have. And that's why during the French presidency, we have set up the axis of a consistent security policy. We set a level of ambition for operations, 60,000 soldiers over the long term. We have set up objectives to reinforce our military capabilities and approve a series of concrete projects for deployment, a tactical transport fleet, a aircraft carrier group, new satellite program interoperability, we have acknowledged the necessity to restructure our defense industries to set up global groups and European excellence centers. We want to set up a technological database. And for this, we have finally given work to the European Defense Agency. We will develop in Europe the key capabilities. We will favor exchanges, investment in research and technology between civil and military. And this is the framework we set during the French presidency. I can talk to you about this again, but for example, we decided to build up a system of surveillance of maritime coasts. And from the Baltic Sea to the Mediterranean Sea, we have only one network of surveillance of our coasts for, if possible, some intervention capabilities. This will take time, but this kind of decision shows that the Europeans have decided to assume their own responsibilities in this world. But this is not in competition, but in complementarity to the renovation of NATO. And this is the second topic I would like to broach. By reminding on the 27th of August 2017 that NATO, as well as the Europe of Defence, were both pillars of basic pillars of our security, the President of the Republic reminded a basic evidence. Strasbourg-Kiel will be the first summit of the alliance held in France. For too long, I know this and have lived it in my own body as soon as I was appointed as minister. France was accused of wanting to weaken NATO. This was unfair. France, for over 10 years, has taken a growing place in NATO. It is one of the greatest contributors to the operations. It is commanding NATO operations. But it commanded in Kosovo, it commanded in Afghanistan, it is taking part in all force generations for the Strategic Reserve Force since 2001. It is participating without failing, and we are one of the very few countries that always met the deadlines. We have participating in the NRF since 2003 or 2004, but the misunderstanding remained. Why is France remaining aside of the integrated structures of NATO? The conviction, and even we are participating in 36 committees out of 38, and we have 120 officers in the headquarters. So we had already done a long part of the road, and the conviction of the President of the Republic, and this is also mine, is that France can renovate its relations with NATO by being an independent ally, and this independence cannot be discussed or negotiated, and a free partner of the United States. But to demonstrate this, we had to relaunch the European defense. What we put on the table when we had the European presidency has been accepted, and that's the way we relaunched the European defense. Of course, this is creating expectations, especially that NATO makes more room for Europe. And there is consistency in our approach. We want an autonomous defense capability of the Europeans, and since we have more weight in security, and since we have done this effort, then we will be able to take larger place in NATO. We increase Europe's military capabilities, and Europe is able to have more weight within the Atlantic Alliance. And this renovation that we are carrying of the relations of France with NATO shall have benefits for the alliance, for Europe, and for France, without putting into question the independence of our country. Since if the alliance has evolved much from its creation, which is what is not changing is the basic pact that is uniting us since the Treaty of Washington. The security of the Allies cannot be divided. This pact is binding Europe and America, but is also an expression of the alliance of the Europeans among themselves. Well, everybody has forgot that the Treaty of Lisbon, and we hope it will come into force, is referring to this. What we are expecting from the summit of the 60th anniversary of NATO is the reassertion of this solemn commitment for the future, and also the necessity of the construction of Europe of defense. And this is what we are expecting from the summit of Strasbourg-Kiel, and is also to turn to the future and think about the alliance we will need. We were talking about this before starting this meeting. So time has come now to start the works on a new strategic concept. And this must also be the summit of Strasbourg-Kiel. We will have to draw the conclusions and consequences for the missions and the organization of the alliance, but also for the cooperation between the European Union and NATO. There are some questions that we have to put on the table. I will list a few of them. Which complementarity do we have with NATO? You can see very well, for example, that you cannot imagine the Atlantic Alliance intervening to make a stability and security operation in Africa. But, on the other hand, Europeans have their place here, and this is what is happening now. Second question, is the Atlantic Alliance a global organization or a sub-regional organization, or is it before all among a collective security pact? To us, it is both a pact and a system of collective security. That's the first thing. Is NATO this system of collective security, or progressively should the Atlantic Alliance become a tool of peacekeeping at the service of the UN? For us, it must be before all a pact of collective security between Europeans and Americans. Third question. I do not like this word, but it is the only one which is coming to my mind, the borders of the alliance. How far can we enlarge the Atlantic Alliance, knowing very well that I'm telling you this because I'm deeply convinced of that, and that you know that the enlarging NATO too much will weaken it, and you will not keep the strength of Article 5 if you keep enlarging NATO. What are other questions? The new missions of the alliance. Shall we deal with about missile defense, counterterrorism? Shall we consider the problems of environment protection that have consequences in terms of security and stability? Shall we deal with cyber attacks? These are topics that must be broached by the Atlantic Alliance. These are topics that have to be worked on in the coming years. The transformation has been started, but it must increase. And this will be the task of the future Secretary General that we will appoint in a few months. But this will also be that of the nations in favor of an improved efficiency of the structure. And this was also one of the works we were talking about. It is the reorganization of NATO structures. How can you be more efficient with less bureaucracy? 312 committees and subcommittees, and on this topic, we are partners with the British and the Americans. There are three countries who are permanently requesting that the NATO should be restructured. We have to work together on this topic, which is a difficult topic. finally, last topic I would like to broach. It is how to set the conditions for the success in Afghanistan. In 2009, our priority is to ensure that the Afghan people can take part freely in the presidential election. I read the statements of President Karzai, and we should invite him to discuss with all Afghan political officials on the dates of for the elections, since in order for the elections to be a success, the conditions of organization, security of these elections must be met. And before any decision on this date, it is important for all these criteria to be taken into account. The success of these elections will be the best political answer to fundamentalists, the best answer also to the doubts that can rise within our democracies. And beyond this, the basic aim is for Afghanistan not to become a sanctuary for terrorists who threaten our democracies anymore. What shall we do? Of course, we must remain militarily committed as long as possible. It is out of question to abandon Afghanistan, but our objective is clear, and it was a French request in Bucharest, transfer to the Afghans the responsibility for their own security. And that's what France will do this year in the region center around Kabul, and this goes through the accelerated training of the Afghan army and a much more efficient cooperation in the field of police. Afghan authorities must also do more for governance and counter-narcotic. This responsibility, we have sharing it to develop agriculture, to block the importation of chemical products, including by force, and track down the billions of dollars generated by their criminal actions. And this is the second axis. The Afghan people must also be convinced that allied soldiers can guarantee their freedom and security, and that they will not stay in the country forever. And this is a true problem. Without the support of the Afghan people, we will fail. I know that the latest Bible is the French officer who wrote in English, Galula. I guess that all of you have read this. I read it during one weekend about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and this writing should inspire in depth our action towards the Afghan population. This goes also through a strong respect of the Afghan people, of its traditions, of its faith. And we must do everything we can do to avoid side effects, a collateral damage, and which, of course, is giving strength to the recruiting Taliban. And we have to support dialogue and reconciliation with all who want to stop using violence, who want to stop working with terrorists. We have to invite the Karzai government to undertake this process of dialogue and national reconciliation. And there is no better period than an electoral period to discuss with those you are opposed to. And it's the best time, because through the election you are writing the future, or you're shaping the future of your country. And finally, and that's one of the mistakes of the international community, thinking about an own system of governance for Afghanistan. You cannot have an ethnic-centered system. You cannot impose democratic system on a people used to having a tribal system which has never known a central state. So we have to invent a system of governance adapted to Afghanistan's history. And finally, we have to assist Pakistan, because you will not have any peace in Afghanistan without stability in Pakistan. The Pakistani government knows that this stability goes through suppressing terrorism on both sides of the border. Let's take the take President Zardari to his word, but let's be clear, there are no good and bad terrorists. All networks must be tracked down, anywhere they are. And finally, I would like to say, as soon as we have redefined our whole concept in Afghanistan, linked to with an increased participation of the Americans, quite rapidly we'll have to set schedules, timelines. Periods or times, or meeting points, or at least some dates from which we could consider that we have set such or such an objective. And why not set quite rapidly a date that could announce the beginning of the withdrawal of the alliance's forces? Finally, last topic, we must also together redefine our relations with Russia. And this would be my conclusion words. We have to invent a new partnership with Russia. We have to create confidence relations with Russia. The economic crisis is touching Russia in its face, which has been fragilized by the fall of the oil prices and the obsolete character of its production system. It cannot be excluded that Moscow should become self-centered again and shall use the temptation to control the Caucasus republics. But I want to be optimistic, and we have to think about how to rebuild a future of cooperation and of confidence, because if you have a look at Russia's borders, you will notice that it is with the Europeans that the Russians have interest in building a strategic and confident partnership. And I have noticed through our relations with the Putin or Medvedev administration that the Berlin Wall has not always fallen in our heads. And on both sides, European side and Russian side, we need to break our prevention and to build a strategic partnership based on the relation of confidence. I'm convinced that as much as for the Russians as for ourselves, it is a horizon which is possible. And let's believe President Medvedev. He's proposing a new security treaty in Europe. Let us propose to him that the OSCE is the framework of the discussion of a new treaty of security in Europe. Let us enable the proposal of the United States to relaunch the strategic talks be a success. We wish negotiation post-start to have a good conclusion. We must go on with cooperation with the European Union in order to build with the Russians a common economic and human space. We have to work together on the threats that are concerning all of us. Terrorism, proliferation, starting by with answers to Iran's ballistic and nuclear programs, which is at the door of Russia and Europe, efforts of dialogue, but also increasing sanctions if required. This is a nice topic for us to broach our relations with Russia under a new angle and with the ambition to build a relation of confidence. Ladies and gentlemen, many observers have underlined in the latest month how much the burden imposed on the new president of the United States was heavy. Two major commitments: the threat of terrorism and an unprecedented economic and financial crisis, the threat of a major crisis with Iran and its nuclear program. And I was about to say, and well, let us say it, we have to have the U.S. and the world reconcile with each other, and that's the greatest stake for President Obama. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the burden imposed to the President of the United States is huge, but it will be all the easier as it will be borne by a common message that would be forwarded by the Europeans and by the Americans, since we have the same values. We believe in a world of stability and security. We believe in a world of peace, and we believe in a world of democracy. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We have roughly 45 minutes for a few questions. I'm going to ask folks to identify themselves and wait for the microphones. Before I turn to the audience, I did want to pose a question myself. Mr. Minister, you opened by giving us a wonderful tour of all of the many challenges that we face and highlighting the evolution that we've seen in recent years in what defines the transatlantic relationship. In many ways, it's not just about Europe and the United States. It's about how we look at many challenges around the world and how we work with new partners. In light of the evolution of the threats we face, in light of the evolution inside the European Union and your comments about the evolution of European defense, I'm sorry, I wanted to ask you about the structures with which we try to tackle these challenges. I mean, is it a question of, in terms of what we're facing now, reforming existing institutions, bringing reform to the EU-US relationship, particularly in light of some of the changes on the defense side of the equation? Is it a question of reforming NATO? Or is it a question of looking for new ways to cooperate, looking to focus on the connective tissue between the EU and NATO, looking at other institutions? You mentioned the OSCE, the UN. I mean, I'm just wondering if, in light of all the changes we've seen over the last 20 years, if we've got the structure in place that allows Europe and the United States to focus on many of the common challenges that we face, whether it's climate or defense and security related, Iran, Pakistan. How do we go about tackling the fact that the structures we have in place still to this day seem rather inadequate?
That's a huge question, but at least there is one thing which is certain. We have to invent between NATO and the European Union a structure which makes it possible to implement this complementarity. I think we need, at one time or the other, to create a high-level group that would gather the main people in charge of NATO and of the EU so that this dialogue can exist. Of course it exists, but at least we need a high-level group that makes it possible to have a permanent dialogue between NATO and the European Union. But I was about to say, this dialogue will also occur through Europeans and the EU that take into account better their problem of security, and as such have more power to be heard in the transatlantic alliance. we probably need a structure that enables to make this permanent dialogue between NATO and the EU, but beyond and more generally, and this is what we are trying to defend, it is the idea that the Europeans, who are taking a major part of their responsibility, a more important, actually, part of their responsibility, are able to count more within the Atlantic Alliance, and since they have more influence, to create a dialogue that makes it possible to build up this new layout of security. And it is because we have a stronger Europe, which is able to have more weight within the Atlantic Alliance, that it will be able to dialogue within the Alliance in a more balanced partnership. And this is what we are seeking for. And because behind all this, and this is the question I was asking at the beginning of my introduction of my conference, the time of hyperpower is finished. We are now in a world of relative powers. And the transfer of power is underway, whether you want it or no. And this is the reality. So we will need, and you will also need, a new relation, new relationship. And I'm convinced of this.
Reggie, please do wait for the microphone.
Thank you. I'm Reginald Dale of CSIS. Thank you for that very clear and interesting talk. I'd like to follow up and actually broaden Julie's question and then ask a more practical one. At the beginning of your talk, you talked about how the European Union could be a model for cooperation more widely around the world between other countries. But the European Union has only achieved the degree of cooperation it has through a very complex institutional structure in which a lot of sovereignty has been pooled. Are you suggesting some sort of frame of world governance that would require some sort of new institutional framework globally, not just across the Atlantic? And the more practical question is, when you talk about strengthening the European defense effort, making it more autonomous, making people more committed to it, how does that fit with a future in the next few years in which defense budgets are going to be under extreme pressure and may even be reduced? Thank you.
Well, I'm a happy defense minister because the budget of equipment of the Defense Ministry is growing by 20% for 2009. So we have at least the proof, the evidence, that the economic crisis in a country does not automatically reduce the defense budget. And even it was an argument for me to the President of the Republic when I proposed to him that my ministry takes part in the economic relaunch program, so that 1 euro spent for equipment, since we do not buy all our equipment in the United States, is 1 euro which is spent for the French defense industry. And these are French employees, French studying, and even European research officers. And so we have an equipment budget which is increasing by 20% in 2009. And as a whole, in a whole, thanks to the restructuring of our defense, since we will reduce and rationalize the structures, because here also there was a lot of work to do. And all the cost, the savings we are doing in our operating costs, we reinvest it by 100%. 100% is dedicated to investment. I do not have the feeling that the British budget is falling. I haven't seen such figures, because these are the two main countries in the field of defense. My German counterpart also sees his budget at roughly the same level. And I don't think that the Europeans are on a slope that would bring them to reduce their military effort. You cannot do this forever, otherwise we would not have any money anymore. And to the contrary, for us, when we are talking about the Europe of defense, it is the idea of pooling of some programs. And this Europe of defense is, these are not additional expenses or additional burdens. To the contrary, it is the way to rationalize a certain number of programs. I will take some concrete examples. Today we have European industries that are working on the same research programs or have research offices working on the same program. And what we propose is that these industries, instead of conducting on their own identical programs on some topics, do it in common, either via common assets or research offices. And we have some very good talks with Finmeccanica or on certain topics. My Polish colleague is interested in partnership between the French naval industry and the Polish naval industry, and I told my British colleague I was very much ready to envisage an industrial partnership in fields of land forces, partnering between BAA and Nexter, and I told my German colleague that in the field of submarines we could do things together instead of being in competition. And for us, Europe of defense is also a way to rationalize, to have better cost efficiency, but to keep this industrial and technological basis. Like the relation between Europe and the US has a ratio of 1-6. If the Europeans do not rationalize, if they do not pool their programs, one day will come, and this can come very rapidly, when Europeans will be totally in the hands of the American industry. Do not see here the hostile statement, but to the contrary, it is the will of the Europeans to have their autonomous capacity. Well, you can see that the international institutions are not tailored to the current world anymore. They have been invented in 1945, after the end of World War II. We made a difference between the victory, those who won the war and those who lost the war. And you can see that these institutions must be renovated. We cannot go on with a Security Council within the UN, which looks like the way it looks now. In the world, in the field of world governance, we have a governance in the commercial field, which works quite well, which is the World Trade Organization, but we have to invent a new one for environment-related problems. We have, on the political and strategic questions, a Security Council, which is dealing with the new emerging world. How can it be that Brazil and India are not in the Security Council? How can they not be members of the Security Council and take part in the elaboration of this new world? How is it not possible that we do not have any African country? How can we exclude all Arab countries? And the cooperative world I wish we are tending to can exist only if you do not exclude the others. If a cooperation requires to take decisions together and share them together and to create systems, decision-taking systems in which a decision is shared and ambitions are shared by everybody. And this is what we have to build. So we have a governance in the field of environment protection to create. We have to change the governance within the United Nations. We have to invent international institutions that reflect the world which is emerging right now. And we cannot keep institutions dating back to 1945.
And we'll take two together. If you could just hand the microphone to your right after you're done, Stuart, that would be great.
Monsieur le Ministre, merci de votre...
Thank you very much for a presentation, which was very clear, very interesting, and very ambitious. Do you see any opportunities to improve the cooperation between Paris and Washington in the field of security or between the European Union and the United States? I think, for example, about Africa. Our new African child is interested in developing local forces in Africa or contribute to maritime operations on the east and western coast of Africa. Do you see any opportunities to improve cooperation?
Thank you very much. I unfortunately don't speak French as well as Stu does. My name is John Sandrock. I'm now with Analytic Services, which is a Washington-based mostly defense contractor. I was very pleased to hear you mention the OSCE. Two of us, at least in this room, have a strong and long connection with the OSCE. Bob Beecroft, of course, over here was the U.S. ambassador, the OSCE ambassador in Bosnia-Herzegovina. I was in Tajikistan for 15 months, and for 6 months of that, I was the acting head of mission. But my question goes to the fact that the Helsinki Accord, 1975, established certain norms and principles which all the participating states have agreed to adhere to. But for the last 10, 15 years, it seems like we're cherry-picking what we want to agree to and what we don't. Georgia comes to mind, what's happened there, the unresolved conflicts over Nagorno-Karabakh and others. I wonder if you could envision a role for the OSCE in the future as a stronger, rejuvenated organization, and how that would be? How would that come about? The Forum for Security Cooperation exists. It's existed for a long time. Can we reinvigorate that? Is this a pattern that could be used to address other issues? How do you maintain ODIHR out of Warsaw and its capabilities and its requirements? Thank you.
First, I think that cooperation between the United States and Europe or between the U.S. and France is excellent. That's the truth. I have the feeling through the discussions we have with the American administration on even the most sensitive topics, and even in some periods where the relations between France and the United States were quite tense. This cooperation never came down. There are some topics we cannot deal with in public, but on all these topics, partnership between France and the United States has never been distorted. As far as basic topics were concerned, and I noticed that cooperation between France and the United States, between Europe and the United States, whether it be about counterterrorism, intelligence, this cooperation is very strong. Can it be improved? Of course it can be improved. You can always improve things. If something cannot be improved, then that would mean that life is at its best. So you took an example, which is the training of security forces through your AFRICOM. And if I understood well, that you have copied on what we are doing. Since we were doing this, have been doing this for many years. It's a good example. And we were doing it on French at French level, and we decided to do it at European level. Are there any fields in which, to my sense, cooperation should be improved? Very honestly, just like that, I do not have any major topics coming to my mind. Can seem surprising to you, but our pilots of the Navy are trained on American aircraft carrier for many years. We have permanent standing exchanges of information. We have programs that enable French officers that come to your forces and vice versa. I go to French units. I find American soldiers who are here in an exchange period, cooperation period, training period. And, well, we have some cooperation levels that are quite excellent. In 10 minutes, when once I have left the room, I will tell you, I should have thought about this one, but to tell the truth, each time I meet American officials, at no time there are some cooperations, except on some topics I will not talk to you about. We have the feeling that we are talking about problems of cooperation, because it is working so well at the lowest levels that very rarely we need to mention them at the political level. But to the contrary, let me tell you, even if it's not the right topic, the same topic, in the field of industrial cooperation, we cannot have two languages. See? You cannot have the will, on the one hand, to have open states, and on the other hand, to refuse to be open, if you see what I mean. When a Europe product is better than an American product, it's better because we win all contracts and we beat you everywhere. The MRTT, the air tanker, one by Airbus, one in Australia, one in the Gulf countries, even in Saudi Arabia. And when a product is better, you have to accept that it's better in its own country, and not, you should not consider that it is. That's the first time we have better product than what you do, so that was a good chance for us. It was a good opportunity for me to convey this message, since I know that the competition has reopened, so I had to say this. So about the OSCE, let us give it for as a framework to have the opportunity to take part in the elaboration of a new security pact before asking about other missions the OSCE could have. I think let us remain in the spirit of Helsinki, ensure stability and security, take care of human rights. And this is, to my mind, a beautiful mission for an organization which indeed has been too much forgotten for a few years.
Thank you for also for a very, very concise and yes. I'm Leonard Oberlander, an independent consulting international liaison. I'm not representing an organization that I'm affiliated with here in my question. I'd like to ask you, in this very comprehensive discussion regarding relations between NATO and the European Union and international structures, we're talking principally about civil servants of the several nations involved. In the private sector, which you just touched on, there are also many structures that are corporate structures which are international. In the United States, many industries are owned, for instance, by Russians and by owners of other countries. There are partnerships and joint ventures internationally among the nations of NATO, European Union, Russia, and others. How do you see these relationships in the private sector and the relationships in the government sector driving each other, one from an economic profitable standpoint and the other from international cooperation standpoint? Thank you.
I'm Avis Bolland, Mr. Minister. Thank you very much for your very clear intervention and very informational. France is a nuclear power, one of two in Europe. Could you tell a word about how you envisage this nuclear capacity in the framework of your reintegration into NATO? Do you envisage a role such as that of Great Britain, or, as always, the nuclear French nuclear capability must remain independent? I hope I will not disappoint you, madam, but this nuclear capacity is a fully independent capability, and we would like to keep this stance of the Statement of Ottawa of 1974. We have built this deterrence force, independent force, and let me remind you that in the decision, the motivation of General de Gaulle to leave the integrated command of NATO, when you have a look at the letter he had sent and the content of the problem at that time, he was mentioning, of course, his will to quit the logic of blocks, since we had quite a few tensions. There was no actually it was a kind of warming of the relationships between the Soviet Union and the Western countries. He mentioned the fact that there were foreign forces in France and the occupation of our airspace by foreign military air forces. And the third topic was the independence and autonomy of France as far as its deterrence force was concerned. And this was the main debate. So, of course, we cannot imagine one second that we could change our strategy in that field. I will also remind you that the principle of this deterrence force is full autonomy, and it is the least minimum required force. It is dimensioned according to this principle. So no evolution on this topic. As far as the other question, I'm sorry, I do not really see what you were mentioning in the relationship between the private sector, Russia, and the European Union. I didn't really understand what it was about. You want to try ask the question again?
Differently. The relations between NATO, European Union, and Russia and other countries is sometimes defined as tense, as competitive, and needing reform and are difficult to manage. On the other hand, in the private sector, the private corporations of these nations have formed partnerships, joint ventures, they're cooperating with each other. There is very little characterization of tenseness, and their aims are for profitability for the shareholders and cooperate with each other to achieve that, not national interest or national security or patriotic motivations, which are the government's motivating forces. Which is driving which? How do you see what the private sector is doing as influencing NATO, European Union, Russia relations, for instance, and what the countries are doing and the government institutions are doing, which might be influencing the private sector? Which is influencing which and how?
That's a huge question. What I know is that it's relationship between human beings which are building confidence, conditions for confidence and dialogue, as much as the structures. So if the private structures are able to create the conditions for dialogue and the relationships between the human beings in these private sector are able to build confidence relationships. You mentioned NATO, the United States, the European Union, Russia. Well, it's all the best. And this is also globalization. It's also the fact that the exchange of information of human beings and capitals and assets lead to create the conditions for a new relationship that, of course, can influence the public structures you were mentioning. Of course, I think it's natural. That's the way it works.
Question short.
Sure. Mr. Robert Wall, I'm a reporter with Aviation Week. And since you brought up military hardware, I thought I could ask you about the A400M. Have you made any progress talking to Berlin and London in getting requirements and contractual relief, as you're trying to do to restructure that program And secondly, if you can't, what will friends do? Akatsadem.
Okay, and this gentleman right here.
Merci, Monsieur le Ministre.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. I'm David Nendley.
Last week, General Abdulrahim Wardak, the Minister of Defense from Afghanistan, gave a talk a few blocks away in which he argued against the notion of lowering expectations, granted the challenges in Afghanistan. And I'm wondering if you could, what were your thoughts on that?
Great. And the woman, question about whether or not we should be lowering our expectations in Afghanistan, the goals, should we be scaling back our objectives?
Oui, bonjour, monsieur. Je m'appelle Gilles Marie.
I'm Gilles Marie Perriot.
Special responsibility. À Schauberg, en mars 2008, President.
In March 2008, President Sarkozy said that France will strengthen the disarmament force through transparency. What is the plan of France to reach that aim?
Oui, j'ai compris.
Well, actually, there is not no country is more transparent than France in that field. We have full transparency. I will send you back to the statement of Cherbourg of by the President of the Republic. We have mentioned during the construction of a nuclear submarine, he broached the whole deterrence policy of France, and all our facilities are checked, and they can all be checked. And in France, you will probably have the country which is applying transparency with the most rigorously. And quite frankly, we are fully transparent and irreproachable. All our facilities can be checked, controlled. The IAEA comes to us and makes checks. If the whole world could be as transparent as France on the nuclear facilities, I can promise you you would have much, much less trouble. About the Afghan defense minister, if I understood well, you met General Wardak. Well, I think we have only one aim. There are not several of them. It's to enable Afghanistan to be a sovereign state in terms of security and peace. Of course, the notion of security and peace is not the same as in a Western country, but this is the aim. We cannot have any other aim. Of course, you have to make a difference between between security in Afghanistan and the security in our own towns. And they are different. They don't have the same history. They don't have the same system. The only aim for the international community is a sovereign state living in peace and security. I do not see any other aim. About the A400M, another excellent program of the European industry. Which has a few delays. Let me remind you had 5 years delay on the C-17. It's very difficult for me to broach this topic that I know by heart since I've been spending a lot of time on it. I regularly meet with my European counterparts, because it is led within the framework of OCCAR. So all decisions have to be taken within seven of us. And this is the charm of Europe. So it's difficult for me to broach this topic because of the contractual relationships we have with EADS and the deadlines we have with them. But the will of France is to act so that we can have the tactical transport aircraft capabilities that the Europeans need. And of course, this, according to the delays we have with the A400M, to foresee a provisional temporary solution, since our Transals are at the end of their lives, and between the A400M, the arrival of the A400M within our forces and the reduction of our transport fleet, we will probably need to find temporary solutions. And European cooperation can help us. Some European countries have transport capabilities. That they could make available to other countries. We also have, why not, NATO, which has its C-17 fleet. We are having a close look at all this, and I will present to the President of the Republic a few proposals in a few months. But this program is for us a main program of Europe, and we have it in our heart. We are having discussions. There are shareholders involved in this, and I cannot talk more about the subject.
You could take time out of your schedule to join us. Unfortunately, Dr. John Hamry, the president of CSIS, was not able to be with us. He's over in Asia at this very minute, but he wanted me to pass on a token of his appreciation. John actually comes from the Great Plains, and he likes to turn to Native American history to show his appreciation. He's asked me to pass on a talking stick. I guess as tribal history goes, around the council fire, the person holding this stick actually had the floor. So we yield the floor to you and hope that you'll come back to CSIS. Thanks again for joining us today. Thank you.